Thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode for today's conference. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now, I will turn the meeting over to your host, Dr. Viana. You may now begin the conference.
Thank you, and welcome everyone for joining our fourth of four webinars for the Autism Care Demonstration Changes. Today is session four. We're going to talk about other important changes. I'm going to go to the next slide. So here's our agenda. Let me do some introductions again real quick. My name is Dr. Chris Viana. I'm a clinical psychologist here in the Medical Affairs Directorate at the Defense Health Agency, and I'm the clinical lead for the ACD. And with me, I have Dr. Amy Serta.
Hi, Dr. Amy Serta here. I'm a nurse consultant with the TRICARE Health Plan portion of the Defense Health Agency, overseeing the ACD and behavioral health. Thanks, Chris.
Great. Thanks, Amy. So the rest of the agenda is before you. We'll talk about three remaining topics that will are probably of interest to various stakeholders. We'll talk about the timeline, and then we will round out today's call with a handful of Q&As that were submitted in advance. Just a reminder that the phone lines in the Adobe Connect are listen only, meaning that it's just myself and Amy speaking, that you can submit any questions through the Q&A box or to the ACD mail email, which is eha.acd@mail.mil. Again, a reminder to be respectful with your comments and questions. We are recording both through Adobe Connect and through the phone line. The slides of all of these presentations that are in the download box and the as PDFs will be available here, but also we're posting them to the health.mil/autism website along with the recordings. The first three sessions are up and available, so if you aren't in Adobe right now and are looking to pull them later, you certainly can do so, or share the link and information with your coworkers, colleagues, other stakeholders who might be interested in this information. A reminder that this manual change published on March 23rd. The link is here in the PDF or this presentation, but if you go to the TRICARE manuals, if you Google TRICARE manuals and you go to the demonstration section, so that's TRICARE Operations Manual, Chapter 18, you'll find this the manual itself. It's also available in our downloads box. And Amy, I'm going to turn it over to you for the first slide.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. So we have utilization management, which in the manual is paragraph 9.1, and this is a contractor responsibility, but we wanted to touch base on it. So we have UM reviewers, which will be employed by the contractors who are BCBAs or a like specialty. And these UM reviewer roles are different from the ASN. So if you're contacted for some reason during the UM process, this person will be different from the ASN. A contractor-specific tool is used for UM, and this could be a variety of criteria, just like other UM tools that can be used for other medical benefits. All treatment plans will be reviewed for clinical necessity by the UM reviewer using that UM tool before approving units for the next 6 months treatment authorization. And if there's been no progress over that 6 months of service, then you'll likely be engaged by the UM reviewer or by the contractor. And that could be, to revise goals, revise criteria, or revise targets. And then lastly, there's an expectation that there will be a reduction in services over time. Of course, that is completely dependent on the beneficiary. We know that, for example, a three-year-old treatment plan and reduction of services over time may look a lot different than, say, a 10-year-old, especially when factoring in different severity levels and length of treatment and all that. Okay, next slide. Chris?
Yep, so we're going to touch base on program integrity. So this is, again, a contractor function. It's paragraph 9.2. The elements here, the paragraphs have been streamlined to adhere to the regular basic benefit guidelines. So that's TOM Chapter 13. That's where program integrity activities occur. Why we are talking about it here is that, you know, unfortunately, fraud, waste, and abuse continues to be problematic for the ACB. So I encourage everybody to, if you haven't already read those DOD Office of Inspector General reports, that was for the South and the North region. Those were they're a couple of years back, but those are examples of the kind of fraud, waste, abuse activities, improper payments, and billing activities that are happening. And so just recommend, if you haven't looked at it, you should maybe take a read. A reminder too that fraud, waste, and abuse activity, or those kind of surveillance types of activities, investigations happen at a variety of agency levels. So it's not just DHA, but there are other stakeholders that look into that, things like Department of Justice, like I said, the DHA Program Integrity Office. Ultimately, the message here is make sure you're accurately documenting what you're doing. So who's rendering the session, what provider type and name, you know, what is it then, in fact, that you have rendered, you know, something like the duration. This is an example, a duration of your services, please accurately document that. And lastly, I want to remind everybody that your documentation or your services, rendered services, for the purpose of TRICARE reimbursement, must be in compliance with the ACD. So things that are not authorized or things that are not approved or not allotted under the demonstration authority are should not be happening. So please don't do those things. All right. And then, Amy, turn it back over to you for contractor responsibilities.
Okay. All right, so now there's a requirement for essentially a contractor web page that's ACD specific, and that can include the directory, so a directory or a link to a directory for ACD providers, which could include the ABA providers, parent-mediated programs, the ASD diagnosing providers, respite care, those kinds of things. A link for education and resources, and then a link to the contractor provider portal. So we really want, you know, it just to be a simple place for providers or beneficiaries to go to access all the information that they may need. Additional contractor responsibilities also include some care coordination. So, for example, if a beneficiary or a family is PCSing, there's a little bit more coordination between the two ASNs, the gaining contractor and the losing contractor. The BT certification, I know we've gotten a lot of questions about this, and now there is a requirement for BTs to be certified within 10 business days from the receipt of a complete application. So just ensure that those applications are complete and accurate. There's a new active provider placement requirement that will be starting on 8-1. This will help families connect with services that fit their needs in a more timely manner. And then we identify the access to care standard, 28 days to obtain an assessment, and then 28 days to begin treatment, you know, after that assessment. And just a reminder that for those access to care standards, that MTF-directed referrals or family choice does not ensure access to care is met. Sometimes we get these directed referrals, and they're for facilities that may, you know, have a 3 to 6 month wait list when there's actually another provider available within that 28-day standard. So we really, really stress that it's important to let the contractors use their processes and assign the providers accordingly, especially with this new active provider placement process. Next slide. Okay, so the phased implementation timeline, I know we've gone through this pretty much every session. So the three things to highlight here are that the UM was implemented or will be implemented on August 1st. The active provider placement process will start on August 1st, sorry. And then on January 1st of next year is the directory update. I saw some questions come in, Chris, so I just want to point out that there is a little bit of a discrepancy in the manual right now, and it's on the ABA provider education. That will begin January 1, 2022. So I hope that helps. Next slide. Okay, so please submit policy questions regarding the manual change to the ACD email. It's the daha.acd@mail.mil, and do not send us any PII or PHI. I guess I want to take this moment, too, to just reiterate that we've received a lot of questions. We're going to go through, I think, maybe 20 or so in the next few slides, but I just want to point out that we still plan on posting to the health.mil/autism the questions that have come in once we kind of consolidate and go through and answer all of them. So keep your questions coming. We will get to them. We will answer, and we will post some FAQs to the website. Next slide. Okay, so let's go into the questions here, and I think it's over to you, Chris.
Yes. Okay, so the first slide here is questions. There, like Amy said, we got several hundred questions. A lot of them, there are lots of duplicates, so we're trying to pull the most common ones, and then we will address, consolidated address. But these three are related to provider education, and there are one or two that came in that I wanted that are coming in now that I'll address as well. So, what is the provider education? What will it look like? The requirement is that the contractors provide, develop, and provide this provider education. The information and how they're going to handle these and the participation will be information that will be provided by the contractors, so we are not dictating, you know, how or the what, other than that they must do it. So look for that information to come from your managed care support contractors, HealthNet and Humana. What is the billing code for attending a provider training, and are there any continuing education credits? So this is a provider education training that is going to cover things under the, you know, what is TRICARE, what is the TRICARE benefit, what are ACD requirements, things like that. There are no billable units for this, and there are no continuing education credits for this. Who needs to take the provider training? So it's listed under the paragraph for autism corporate service providers and sole providers. So it'll be, the requirement will be for the individuals who are going to ultimately, who's responsible for that company, that business, that agency, the one who's signing off on it. However, there is a reference in paragraph 8.3.9 that says all authorized providers TRICARE authorized providers agree to render care in accordance with the rules and regulations of the ACD. So while the contractors will be requiring the, you know, that the company level, the responsible party to attend, for the business, for the company to attend the training, it really behooves all of you to learn, or, you know, for your supervisors or leaders to share this education and information. There's one question that I've seen a couple of times come in, and I wanted to, you know, derail from the our prepared slides here, is about a grace period. This is a, you know, I'm not sure exactly the question, because it's going to be an annual training, and so the contractors will provide information about how that will get accomplished. There's no real need for a grace period because it's going to be, you know, an annual requirement. And since it doesn't start until January, I mean, I guess technically that I could interpret that to be grace period, but just to recognize that further information about if rollout will be coming from the contractors as they have their stuff approved and, you know, just determine their best path to getting everybody trained. Amy?
Thanks, Chris. So the next couple of questions are about the participation agreement. So what is the timeline for participation agreements to be sent out to providers for re-signing? The deadline to re-sign is 8/1, and we would like time to receive and review the document. When will these be sent out and how? So the both of the contractors, or all of the contractors really, will start communication regarding the re-signing of the participation agreements, but I just want you to be mindful that you have till August 1st. They're still working on processes and updating all these documents, so don't worry. They will get to you before that 8/1 deadline, well before, and you will have time to re-sign them. Chapter 18 of the updated TOM includes an addendum that is to be signed by the provider. Where should this addendum be sent? Will a copy signed by the DHA be returned to the provider? So I just wanted to clarify that that addendum is actually the participation agreement, and the contractors will provide guidance on their process for re-signing in the coming months. Next slide, Chris.
Yep, okay, so what happens if a provider submits a reauthorization request 30 to 60 days before it expires, but the contractor doesn't provide the reauthorization in a timely fashion? So we put the specific reference, paragraph 8.6.2.4 requires the contractor to complete a review within 5 business days. So what that means is that pending all of the things are submitted accurately, right, that you've got all of your outcome measures, that you've got your treatment plan, that you have all of the things submitted, that the contractors are then going to be or are then required to complete those reviews in that time frame. So there should be no reason if the complete submission is submitted timely, there should be no reason that the contractor is not completing it within that time frame. Now, if they're late submissions or incomplete submissions, that may risk, I think, timely processing, but not on the part of the requirement to review in 5 days. The second question there is for treatment plans that are due within the allowed 60-day submission window before August 1st. Are providers allowed to default to the current standards? For example, if the report expires on 8/5, is the provider allowed to submit the treatment plan on 7/5 with the new revisions? The answer to that is no. The contractors, their requirement is to be effective or active as of August 1st. So anything submitted prior to August 1st is not going to be eligible for a kind of review and adherence to the new changes that are going to be in effect after 8/1. So anything that expires between now and then or even shortly thereafter, your submission should be according to the current, those 4 CPT codes under the MUEs and those elements. Going forward, after 8/1, you can then submit for contractor review. Amy?
Okay, Chris, I just wanted to touch on 2 things that I've seen come in quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
One being the BT certification, if this is something new or if it's just the normal BT certification process that they've been going through, and that is correct. It's just the time frame requirement that has changed. And then secondly, there's been some questions about the requirement for, which I don't think we touched on it here, but BTs being removed from the schools, and if there's an active authorization in place past that May 1 date, what happens there? And we touched on this in the last webinar, I believe, but if there's a current authorization in place after that May 1 date, so say you have an authorization from February, those authorizations will run the course of their authorization period. So, okay, so on to these questions. Beneficiaries receiving ABA services and change regions / NCSC, so going from east to west, will their ABA referral still be valid from the previous NCSC, or will they need a new referral? So this was a change, and yes, the revision will ensure that transferring the beneficiaries will still have an active referral, of course, if it's valid. New authorization will be required, but the referral will be honored and transferred by the contractor through the ASN. Do all BTs need to be RBT certified? So no, BTs require certification by one of the three approved certifying bodies, which would be the BACB, the BICC, and the QAPA. And how will BTs meet their supervision requirements? I've seen a lot of questions about this, and I was a little bit surprised because we actually removed the reimbursement for supervision 1/1/19. This isn't new. Supervisors have the flexibility to complete supervision according to their certifying body guidelines. And next slide, Chris.
Yep, okay, so what if something new comes up and we need to do additional assessments outside of the 14-day period of that CPT code 97151? That should be, we expect that to be happening, that once you've completed your initial assessment, you've submitted your treatment plan for approval, you've been issued an authorization for treatment services, there should be updates to your the treatment plan, and those are captured under the 97155 CPT code. That's the purpose of that, one of the purposes of that code is to probe your targets, see if there are any changes that need to be made, and update them. That doesn't mean you submit a new treatment plan. That just means that you're modifying the goals or the targets, or if something has stalled out, or maybe you've made a lot, maybe the beneficiary has made a lot of progress that you need to move it along faster than anticipated. So once that 14-day window or that initial 5-1 assessment is complete, you're looking to the 5-5 code to do all these other in between the 6-month period updates. The follow-on question that we thought was important is, can you document 5-5 and not make any changes? That is, yes, that may happen, is that you'll do some probes, you'll see, maybe you had hoped something could move along, but it doesn't, or maybe, in fact, you have to revise to slow down or kind of break down the step of the target a little bit more. So there may be instances where you render 97155 and nothing will change. That just needs to be reflected in your notes. Why, you know, what you did, why did it change or not change? Just accurately capture the activity. Amy?
Okay, so when is the start date for using code 97155 one time per month, or else a penalty will be given? And that's the 10% penalty. So all CPT code changes apply for new authorizations on or after 8/1/21. So meaning that if you have a current authorization approved, I don't know, May, you may not have asked for that or been authorized for 97155 one time per month. So that authorization would run its 6-month course, and then on your next authorization period, you would need to request the appropriate units. Per the updated TOM, code 97155 must be rendered at least once per month. Is that to mean at least one unit per month? Is there any further clarification on the length of a session to meet that monthly requirement? You know, we've received this question numerous times. So the requirement is for one session per month. Whether that is one unit or several units depends on the treatment plan and the beneficiary's progress or lack of progress. So essentially, you know, it's up to the clinical necessity of the beneficiary in the case. Next slide, Chris.
Yep. Before we move on, I want to address a couple of the questions that came in. One is, oh.
So I'm going to go back real quick. So the question about rendering 97155 monthly, the question that just came in was, you know, do you have to do 55 so this pose is if you've kind of done your assessment and planning and you have planned out for the 6 month period, you still have to do 97155. While I think that that is an interesting question, I think the reality is that change is happening, and over a 6 month period is definitely too long of a period to not touch base and not engage and not reevaluate your the plan and trajectory. So not doing 97155 monthly is, I think, not the way to go. I think you should, the responsible supervisor should be touching base, should be evaluating, should be reviewing the treatment plan and adjusting and accommodating as it's rolling out. There was another question that I saw that I wanted to answer, but I don't see it now, so I'm going to go on and come back to it next time I have the chance to talk. So this slide here, slide 17, is for the new codes, 55 and 55 and 53 eligible for concurrent billing after 8-1. We just want to reiterate that concurrent billing of 53 and 55 is prohibited now and will continue to be prohibited in the future. If you refer to our last slide deck, session 3, we have a table that shows when the two services at the same time might be acceptable. 53 and 55 are not acceptable for concurrent billing. And the note there that if you are submitting for two sessions at the same time, 53 and 55, only the higher rate will be paid, which is usually probably the 55 rate, but I guess not always. So the second question, with concurrent billing now not authorized come May 1, can a child with ASD have an ABA provider present during these sessions? Again, this is not new. This has actually been in the manual, and I put the reference in there. Tom, the one dated, the manual version, change 45, the one prior to March 31st. Paragraph 17.1, first bullet says, specifically that concurrent billing, for example, billing of two services at the same time is prohibited. This has been prohibited for the duration of the ECD, so it's not now being prohibited after May 1. It's always been prohibited. And then the next one is, I know 99366 and 99368 would not include teachers as a qualified healthcare provider, but would this apply to an IEP meeting where the BCBA, occupational therapist, and speech and language pathologists were present? IEP meetings are not medical team conferences. They're not medical for the purpose of medical care. So IEP is not a covered or reimbursable event, even if you have all three of those providers, those three provider types attending. Amy?
So if we receive a referral for ABA, we complete the evaluation and offer parent training to start as we hire more staff. Does the parent training have to be delivered in person face-to-face, or can it be delivered via telehealth? How long can parent training be offered solely before direct patient care must start? So that if you get a new beneficiary, the initial 6 month authorization will require that the parent training be rendered in person. And then as for the duration of the rendering parent training guidance, that is based on the treatment plan. If the treatment plan is geared towards only parent guidance, then that would be acceptable too. And we just wanted everybody to remember right now that we are still in a pandemic, COVID-19, and under the public health emergency. So the exception to policy regarding 97156 remains in effect through the end of this period. And to make sure I understand, telehealth is acceptable for all codes until the pandemic is over. And no, that is not correct. Only 97156 is authorized for rendering via telehealth. And that's been that way for now over a year. Next slide.
Mm-hmm. This is our last one, and I see we're up at the half hour, so I will be quick. When the core symptoms of autism impair acquisition of daily activities of daily living, can that be targeted? So a reminder here that goals, targets, you know, intervention techniques, all of those are should be for the purpose of targeting the core symptoms of autism. So if you are targeting a behavior that's interfering with a particular skill, it's the behavior that you're targeting, not the skill itself. And in the interest of time, I will address this last one. So we have received a ton of questions. We will be posting them at www.health.mil/autism. We're targeting for early May. Again, there are a lot of questions that came in. We have to filter through. There's still questions coming into the Q&A box as well as the ACD email box. So we appreciate your patience while we get through them all. Again, all of these slides and recordings will be available on the health.mil/autism website. And the last plug here is if you are not currently subscribed and want to subscribe, go to this link here and add your email address to the Gov Delivery platform. At this time, Amy, are there any other closing thoughts or comments?
No, I mean, just that we do realize there's questions coming in that we weren't able to get to today and that we will, you know, like we said before, go through these questions since holiday and post. So I just want to say thank you for everybody that's been attending all of these webinars. We really greatly appreciate the opportunity to get this information out and help in any way that we can with understanding these requirements.
Yep, and one more plug, you know, to say thank you again to everybody for your participation, not only for your participation, but also for your continued support with TRICARE and the military families. And there was one more question I do want to say or answer is when will the family webinar be happening? That information will be going out soon. I think it's either next month or the month after. I don't have that date solidified, but we are doing a beneficiary-hosted event, and that'll be coming. That information will be coming, and we'll send that out too through the Gov Delivery announcement for families who want to participate. Again, thank you, everybody. We will continue to take your questions at the dha.acd@mail.mil email, and look forward to continued engagement. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect. Speakers, please remain on the line with me for a final line count.